Good morning. Good morning, listeners. This is Patty Black. I am back bringing the Good News Show to you. This morning's show is going to be very exciting. We're going to have a special guest. His name is Tim Kellis. He's the author of the book entitled Equality, The Quest for the Happy Marriage. So he has a lot of great information. Stay tuned. We'll have him on in a couple of minutes. I just want to thank all of our loyal listeners for being a part of our show and giving us all of your support, sending in fabulous emails with great topics for us to bring to you later this year, and we really do appreciate it. So thank you very much. You are listening to the Good News Show. It's August 17th, 2009, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, and I am on air with my co-host. Sherry, are you with us?
I'm here. Good morning, Patty, and good morning, everybody. This is going to be a very interesting show this morning because what do we all want to know more about? Relationships and how to have happy relationships. So I'm real excited to have Tim with us, and he's going to give us a lot of great information. I have a lot of great questions that I want to actually ask him. So I'm excited, and I'm ready for Tim as soon as he comes on.
Okay, let's see if we can bring him into the show. Good morning. Welcome to the Good News Show.
Good morning. How are you both doing this morning?
Great. Great to have you with us, Tim.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for letting me come on your show.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. We're very happy to have you. So why don't we just start with having you introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit about what you do.
Okay. Well, I've actually been on an interesting path in life. I actually am not a psychologist. I have an engineering undergrad, an MBA, and I worked on Wall Street for over 10 years as a semiconductor analyst. I was actually the first semiconductor analyst to focus on the communications market. And why that's important is this, the psychology industry is really the third industry I've got my arms around. And the personal point of the story is in about 2000, I met a girl I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life with, and we fell in love, got engaged, and started fighting, and then we did what most couples do today. We went to a therapist, and when I realized that the therapist wasn't really helping, decided to take the issue on myself. So I researched. I read over 100 books, including 2 dozen relationship books, and then I spent 9 months writing my book. And I actually left my Wall Street career in January of 2008 to focus full-time on helping people understand really the root causes of the problems in their relationships and how to overcome them.
Wow. Well, this is a topic that many people are just like sitting on the edge of their seats because there's so much we want to know. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, well, then how did you come up with the book and how did you come up with your topics?
Again, the motivation for writing a book on relationships was a relationship that didn't work out. But basically what I've done is I've written a book using examples throughout history as analogies for relationships. So it's not a John and Jane Doe don't get along followed by behavioral advice. It's actually the only relationship book that's been written that addresses relationships mentally. So, for example, I've got a Martin Luther King section right next to a Hitler section to discuss the concept of prejudices. What we're basically doing as a society is we're developing prejudice against our partner. In fact, Martin Luther King basically summed up my entire project. He was asked once what he thought was the problem in marriages, and his response was, "Oh, I don't know. I think they didn't know each other very well and were afraid." The first section is basically how to understand how to establish the relationship. We're both within a relationship, work together to solve problems. And then you get into the psychology section, which is basically what happens when you aren't getting along. What I basically do is elaborate on the impact of our past issues. Our parents didn't show us enough affection and we're mad at them for that, and how to overcome those through forgiveness, basically, which is a cathartic experience, so that we can look objectively at our partner. And then at the end of the book, I discuss the reason why people are supposed to get along, which is something that we unfortunately have forgotten in our culture of divorce today. Marriage used to be the most important foundation for our society and for our families. And marriage, unfortunately, has taken a back seat as we've grown complicated in our lives and other things have grown in priority, have grown to be more important than our relationships.
All right. Why do you think so many people have a hard time with commitment?
Well, again, that's basically when I get into the concept of insecurities. If you were raised with the most influential people in your life, your parents, with lack of self-esteem, you basically have to be happy with yourself first in order to be successful and happy in a relationship. Because what happens is if you're not happy with yourself, then what you're doing is you're expecting your partner to make up for your unhappiness. That's where the whole concept of codependence comes from. If you are happy with yourself, then you're able to be comfortable in your own skin. And I do want to clarify that being happy with yourself has nothing to do with how much money you're making or not, or how good looking you are or not. Happiness is an internal quality. You're comfortable with, you're basically friends with yourself. As I like to say, who do you talk to when you're talking to yourself? If you're happy with yourself, then that internal dialogue you have in your mind is not an anxious-filled conversation, but one where you're at ease and you're comfortable with who you are, your position in life, where you are in society, what you're doing in life. That's where you get into the concept of discovering what's been referred to as your personal myth, what your goal in life is. You know, we're all, as it turns out, on earth to do something, to figure ourselves out. It's the great question of individuality. And so if you don't have that mental understanding, then that's where you grow to be codependent on your partner.
Exactly. And with communication, I mean, that is such an important part, you know, in being in a relationship, to be able to communicate to your partner that's your friend and to be able to just share, you know, from your heart. And what do you have to say about that?
Well, if you have insecurities, if you are unhappy with an element of your life, for example, if you're insecure about money and you were to get into a financial discussion with your partner, that would be if your partner brings up, we need to buy a new car, for example. And if you're insecure about money, that will be the last comment you hear from your partner. Your immediate dialogue from then thereafter is try to convince your partner that you can't afford money. Regardless of what your partner says, you know, 200,000 miles in the car, it's broken, breaking down. Regardless of what your partner says, you will not open up to an objective communication. That's what I always found interesting with the concept of the lack of communication relationships, because my corporate background, when you're in the corporate world and you have these discussions, Both people in a discussion or in a conflict, are their objectives are the same. The objective is for both to come to an understanding of each other's perspective and then come to a conclusion that both are understand and are happy with. But unfortunately, because relationships are so emotionally based, if your emotional perspective is subjective from your own experiences in life, then you're unable to hear your partner, and that's where the sources of anger and arguments come from. Arguments are basically an emotional attack, so to speak, on your partner to try and convince them that your emotional perspective is what's going to decide. Instead of being a partner where you have half a say in whatever conflicts that you're faced with, you're trying to basically control the situation. That's where the whole power principle comes in.
Mm-hmm. And how many times have you heard that somebody say that they really weren't heard, you know, and how important it is to really hear what the other person is saying and really getting a sense of, you know, like just listening and really hearing what they're saying?
That's the whole point. Your mind shuts down on the person's perspective. Freud's basically conclusion was sexually based, and there was another guy by the name of Alfred Adler whose conclusion was power based. The concept of having to control the situation in a relationship is based on your inability to actually listen to your partner's perspective. And that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to control. That's where the whole notion of prejudice and subjective approach to your side of the story comes into play in the conflicts that you're faced with. You are unable to hear your partner's perspective, and so you're unable to communicate openly and objectively. Another example, your parents were alcoholics, and you see your partner taking the drink. You cannot look at your partner objectively if you're still angry at your parents for being alcoholics. And so when you see them take, when you see your partner take a drink, you're projecting all those fears and insecurities and anxieties that you've developed over your childhood because of what alcoholism has meant to your parents on your partner. So you're not able to look at your partner objectively. And that's, again, where communication breaks down.
And what do you think, I mean, what is a happy and healthy relationship?
Well, the first thing you are is you're comfortable in your own skin. And then you're able to resolve your conflicts with your partner. I write in my book about how if you were to address this with the professionals, they would comment that a relationship without arguments is a boring one. But if you're in that relationship, it's actually the opposite, where, you know, if you're comfortable with yourself and you're single, for example, you know what it's like to live every day where you're working hard, you're trying to be productive in society, you enjoy the time with your friends. That's the approach for happy relationships, where there is there are going to be conflicts because you're bringing two people together with two completely different backgrounds and two different perspectives on life. So if you're able to resolve those conflicts, then your life is a comfortable one. I foresee Martin Luther King talks about the mountaintop. And the mountaintop is basically when you're at old age with your partner sitting next to you with all of your grandchildren running around your feet. That's the long-term objective that we've unfortunately forgotten about. That's why, you know, divorce is such a short-term phenomenon without somebody able to keep a long-term perspective on their relationship. But it's one that's comfortable. You know, obviously, you know, what you read about a lot is it's impossible to keep that romantic part of the relationship that you have, that you experienced in the beginning. And that is true. It's never going to be new. But it's like, you know, a car you're comfortable with, a job you're comfortable with, friends you're comfortable with, long-term, a relationship that is based on a mutual respect and understanding and empathy is one that that problems are resolved in you're comfortable with each other.
Right. Well, now, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, how do you deal with forgiving someone after they've cheated?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the concept of infidelity, the concept of, you know, alcohol's influence, drugs influence, those are actually the result of problems in relationships. The reality is infidelity occurs because the relationship is not working. It is obviously very painful. That's really the death knell in relationships, to have to experience your partner actually being physically involved with someone else, and you are dealing with the problem after the fact, and it does take a lot of forgiveness and overcoming that. The one of the things that is extremely important when an infidelity does occur is for the person who has done the infidelity to not deny it, because you get a lot of times you get denial. I've seen shows on TV where somebody that's cheated is just completely denied that they've done that. And they really have to overcome the lack of trust that happens when someone has done that, because you basically immediately, in one fell swoop, lose all that trust that you've developed throughout your relationship with your partner when infidelity occurs. And that trust is extremely important to build back up again. So it takes a lot of effort on the person who has done the cheating to admit their mistakes, which unfortunately, when people are insecure about their situations, it's really tough for people to admit that they've made a mistake. And first, that's needed, and then you have to build that trust back up, which is extremely difficult to do.
Right. Yeah. So to rebuild trust after that, do you think that that's like a reason to split the relationship up if infidelity happens, or do you think it can be worked through?
Well, my objective is to save relationships. You know, the extreme example that I get when I'm talking to people is physical abuse. If you're, you know, your wife and your husband is physically abusive with you, you know, should that relationship be split up? And conventional wisdom now is yes. Conventional wisdom now with infidelity is more than likely yes. But you know, my objective is to save relationships, and so you have to build that back up. What you're basically trying to do in relationships that have veered off in that unfortunate path is you're trying to reverse the relationship back to where it was in the beginning. That was always the thing that was most challenging for me to understand, is how do you go from falling in love, having somebody that you're convinced you want to spend the rest of your life with, to that relationship being over. And these pains and these arguments, these unresolved conflicts that lead to psychic lesions, unfortunately develop the unhealthy part of the mind, one that you're unhappy with the relationship. The notion that you love someone but you're not in love with them, what that in essence is saying is that those feelings that you've had for your partner have dissipated, but you're logically in love with them. You may have kids together, and you may have, you develop a financial life together. So if you do cheat on your partner, or your partner cheats on you, my objective is to say that you'll ask 10 people, you'll get 10 different answers. Half of them will say they should, and half of them will say they shouldn't. But I would like to think that situation can be fixed, but it does take effort on the part of the person who actually has strayed. Very right. Difficult to do, though. Very difficult. Very painful.
Yeah.
And I understand your approach to having a happy marriage or relationship is to work on it before the infidelity happens.
It's called marriage education. It's a concept that was actually invented or proposed about 20 years ago. In fact, I realized that we try and help couples out at the worst part of their relationship, at the end, after infidelity occurs. My objective is actually to try and help couples at the beginning of their relationship, to educate them on how to approach their conflicts and how to understand the influences of their past on their perspectives of their partners today. I envision one of these days having marriage centers around the country where you have a psychological and a mental education for couples so that they can figure out how to stay out of the divorce trap. But yeah, it's called marriage education. That's the objective.
That's great. Marriage education as opposed to going to a therapist after one has decided to leave the relationship or the infidelity happens. It's really a great approach, Tim, and I'm really just happy to have you on the show and hear what you're doing and have you share it with our listeners, because everybody deals with relationships, and that education
right.
part is missing. We don't get it while we're growing up in school. It's really a piece of life that is missing.
Well, my joke is I grew up relatively poor. My dad was a cab driver. We were raised on like $22,000 a year, and the only advice my dad ever gave me was keep it in your pants, literally. That's all he's ever said to me about relationships. And so I've had to grow up with sort of a blank slate. You know, we don't understand what happens psychologically to us, because really the professionals are still stuck in this biological perspective of relationships. It's sex, it's physical, it's not mental based. And so we go it alone. Everybody's their own case study in how to figure out how to make their relationships work. Now, it's important to keep in mind that not only we only had our culture of divorce for two generations, but we really only dated for two generations. Before, two generations ago, you met your spouse in church, and then you brought them home to the family, and then you got married. I honestly believe my mom was a virgin when she married my dad. And they just celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, so they had a tough marriage, but they stuck it out. But this whole notion of dating is new to our culture. So we don't yet understand how to deal with meeting somebody. I mean, even when we date now, we get to basically test the field, and what we're doing is we're developing a picture in our unconscious of our mate, and that picture continues to grow and to mature as we date with others and break up. that's what you're basically doing. You're and then you make that connection, that most wonderful I mean, as I like to say, if you could bottle that up and keep it for a later rainy day, it would be awesome. But you when you meet that one person and you're both on same path, you do that balancing act where you both come together with similar timing on trying to get to know each other. And then you're both basically, and that's where I believe the concept of soulmates come in. What soulmates basically means is we have a spiritual existence to ourselves. That's not necessarily that's not our physical body. It's something inside of us. And the whole notion of spirituality and soulmates is the fact that, as I mentioned earlier, we have reasons why we're here on this earth. One of them is to meet a partner for life. And when you meet that person, there's that spiritual connection is something that has actually existed before. And that's why divorce is so karmically negative. The karmic debt that you get when you find somebody that's your soulmate and then work yourself into divorce, that's something that you're spiritually speaking you're going to have to deal with in the future.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. That's very interesting. Very good concept. I love having you on our show today. I'm just enjoying everything that you're sharing with us. Tim, it looks like we do have a caller trying to call in, and if you're up to it, I'd like to bring them in and see if they have a question for you.
Absolutely. No worries whatsoever.
Okay, let's see if we can bring them in. Good morning. Welcome to the Good News Show. Good morning. Is this somebody calling from New Jersey? You're online.
Maybe not.
All right, we have their mic on, so let's.
Well, I have an email that was sent in about how do you feel about keeping your independence within your relationship? You have your having your own life outside of your relationship. How do you feel about that part of setting boundaries within the relationship and keeping that part healthy.
They're asking about independence.
That's their independence.
That's actually a very good question. Now, it depends on the reason for the independence. Yes, it's important for us to continue with our own individual identity, but what's important is to keep our own individual identity within the auspice of being basically half of a partnership with someone else. The unfortunate negative approach to independence is when you're growing apart. And what happens is what happens when you're involved, when you're in conflict, continued conflict, when you're arguing all the time. You're basically unhappy with hanging out with your partner. And so that's when the solution is, without solving the problems in the relationship, for you to develop your own hobbies, your own interest in life. Because what eventually happens with each of us as we get older is we go through maturing phases. You lose a job, for example, or you decide that you want to accept a new approach to religion or something that's not traditionally been a perspective of the relationship, and you do that independent of your partner, then unfortunately what you're going to do is you're going to grow resentful of your partner because your partner's not involved in this new mature perspective you have on life. But it's absolutely important to have your own set of friends, to have your own independent life perspective. But again, I think it's important to do that against the backdrop of still staying involved with your relationship with your partner so that you don't grow apart.
Yeah, I think you answered that very well.
Yeah, the growing apart could take place if they're having if it's just as it said, they can grow apart. So I think that's in doing that, you just need to make sure that you're focused on your relationship simultaneously, I think.
Well, that's if you're happy with yourself, you're not codependent on the other person. You can have your own existence, have your own career, have your own set of friends, and have that with the relationship still a positive one and still one that you continue to enjoy time with your partner.
Mm-hmm. And have that interdependency as opposed to codependency.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's actually a great differentiation between the two, yes, where you're still dependent on the other person but in a positive approach.
Mm-hmm. I like that. So I have another question. And since it's about sex and having a busy life and making time, making it more important than having your busy life. And I've talked to a lot of people and about this topic. And, you know, they say that if a person is sexually satisfied, then there's less chance of being tempted to cheat and that they're happier at work. I just heard this on the TV the other day, actually. And in making time for that person, because we do get so involved in life, and that has to be a priority to, you know, make dates together or, you know, make special time together within that relationship.
I couldn't agree more. Let me first comment on the word sex. You know, again, that's, you know, Freud's based on the theory that I want to have sex with my mom, and he's successful today, and he's the foundation for the psychology industry because he discovered that sex sells. I remember watching the nightly news with one of the, you know, major broadcasters that we all look up to mention the word sex, and I thought that was so funny how that term has permeated our entire society. I actually can summarize the entire sex industry with this comment, because the objective isn't sex, it's intimacy. And the difference between sex and intimacy is sex is when you're doing it for your own pleasure, and intimacy is when you're doing it for your partner's pleasure. And it may not be, you know, the physical, you know, intercourse or whatever, but, you know, obviously that plays an important part. But when you come together on a mental level, not on a physical level, and you're there to please your partner as opposed to pleasing yourself, it's a very important part. That's the icing on the cake, as I call it. If your relationship is a positive relationship, then that's the most enjoyable part. And that, you know, in fact, I one of the things I'd like to envision someday is to where couples have a platform for communication about their intimate life in the same manner that they discuss grocery shopping. That they're completely open with each other on the notion of intimacy and coming together and being affectionate. You know, quite frankly, we are afraid to bring that concept up. I went to this marriage conference, and one of the presenters, her summary was, no always wins in sex. If you're in a relationship where intimacy is challenging, then the person who has has difficulty with opening up on that most important part of the relationship, they generally initially respond no about intimacy. And when that happens, there's generally a fight and then ensues, or feelings get hurt, the other person feels rejected, and eventually that topic is not brought up, and it's very difficult because of the fear of getting in trouble or bringing up an issue that is obviously an uncomfortable issue in the relationship. So it becomes what was referred to as a psychic lesion, and it's not talked about. Instead, both in the relationship have to respond mentally with, you know, the nonverbal communications on an attempt to try and address the issue of intimacy. But if it's one that is a comfortable platform within the relationship, then no doesn't win, and couples work together on being very open and fulfilling in their relationship.
Uh-huh. Right.
Wow, and it's really, really great having you on the show. We have a few minutes left. Is there anything that you'd like to share with our listeners? And we'd also like for you to give your website information so that people know how to order your book.
Well, ultimately, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to revert back to, not regress back to, but revert back to the concept of our relationships as the most important part of our life, not how much money we're making or making sure the kids get to school or you know, working 20 hours a day, 12 hours a day or whatever. The point is to re-understand the significance of our relationships with our loved one, with our soulmate in our relationship or in our lives. I've got, my main website is happyrelationships.com. My book is on sale there. I've got it basically 20% off. What I am offering, though, and if anybody in the next 2 hours that buy my book, I have a free teleseminar that I'm offering so that I can work people through the book so that at the end of reading the book, they will, in essence, have a whole new approach to not only relationships, a whole new understanding of relationships, but also a whole new understanding and appreciation of themselves. That's how significant the content of the book is and how important it is for me to help people understand to get my message out. So for your listeners that do want to buy the book in the next 2 hours, they'll get an email from me in the next day or two so that we can make email contact. And then when everybody that buys the book receives it, I will set up a teleseminar on a weekly basis. It takes about 2 months to basically work through the book. But I want to help readers understand the content of the book. So it's happyrelationships.com. I also have my blog is happymarriages.com, where you can see a lot of the content I publish on that blog on a regular basis. So those are two sites to get some background on me. You can also go to my YouTube page. Just search Tim Kellis, and there are a number of videos, including the Bobby and Lynn interview part one and part two, where a couple I work with actually discuss what they learned by reading through my book.
Mm-hmm. That's Tim Kellis, K-E-L-L-I-S.
Yeah, yes,
ma'am. We have a couple of minutes left. I want to comment on your blog. You've written many different things, and they've all been helpful. I've read through some of the blogs on there, and it's just valuable information. So listeners, go to the website, read the blog, order the book, get to know Tim Kellis more, because Tim, it sounds like you're on a new journey now with writing and being an author. Do you foresee writing another book, or are you going to focus on the education centers, or
I've got a ton of things going on. I've got a TV show in development. I'm about to engage a publicist who's got relationships with the major talk shows. I've got two books in my mind. I live in South Florida. I'm starting to meet locally with couples here. I am planning a speaker series, a Happy Relationship speaker series. I'm getting very involved with the spiritual community down here in South Florida and meeting people who have the psychology industry has the biology platform. Once you're born with your brain, and there are diseases, there are disorders, there are neurosis. The spiritual world, on the other hand, the notion of healing and letting go of your past and forgiveness is a second language. So that's the group of people that understand the mental impact of our past on our present. And so I'm working with them to help get my message out. So there's a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, there are a couple other books. One is 10 Steps to Spirituality that I just have to find time to write. There's a lot of things going on, yeah. And then again, I've got a TV show. Hopefully in the next couple of months will start airing on up to 204 stations across the country.
Wow, that's wonderful.
That sounds great.
And exciting. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, we thank you so much for being on our show. We're really happy you were here, and I know our listeners have gotten a lot of information from you today, so we'd like to just say thank you. And we
My
hope
pleasure.
Maybe in the future we can have you back on our show. It's been a lot of fun.
I will be more than happy to come on your show on a regular basis or however often you want me to come to add more detail to what I'm talking about. That'd be awesome.
Great, Tim.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you, guys. You guys, too. Thanks for letting me come on your show.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
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 Well, that was a great interview with Tim Kellis, and I just, love the subject, love his approach. It makes sense.
It does. I mean, there's so much information that is just bottom line stuff that, when in coming from forgiveness and being able to communicate and know the healthy way of interacting and the concept of knowing before, having the education before we start relationships. I always said my mother, when I left home, never gave me the tools that I needed for life, and that's one of them, the tools on how to have a healthy relationship, and in all of our relationships, whether they're with our partner or with our bosses or, our friends. And so that was really, really great, and I want to hear more from him.
I do too, Sherry. We'll have him back on the show. It's been nice having a show with you this morning. And next week, we're going to have to post the guest, if we have it next week. I have a birthday weekend coming up, listeners, so you can send in some emails wishing me a happy birthday on August 22nd, Saturday. And so we may not have a show next Monday, but stay tuned, and you'll see what we're doing next with our next guest. Have a great day. We love you, listeners. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have a great week. Bye.